Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Last year, China did have a significant increase in the amount of U.S. cotton that they imported. A lot of that was around. They've been bleeding down some of their inventory. You know, cotton tends to keep a national inventory of cotton. A lot of that, since China consumes more cotton than they produce.
Just explaining how important a market China is. William Kimbrell is Vice President of Supply Chain Marketing for Asia with Cotton Incorporated.
Overall, they have to keep a healthy inventory. So last year, with the reduction of those inventories, they have been in kind of a replenishing mode, and that's what's moved them up into a higher position. But you're right, Vietnam has been gaining a lot of share. It still is a huge opportunity market for U.S. cotton.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Transportation is essential to agriculture, right? You need to get your products from farm to market, from out of the ground to wherever they need to go, abroad, wherever state they need to go, or city. So as you can kind of see in the chart that we have here, 40% of our freight movement in the U.S. is trucking, 30% is rail, and the rest is split between air, water, other, and pipeline. So obviously trucking and railways make up the bulk of the transportation system when we're talking about moving our agricultural products.
That's Danny Munch with the American Farm Bureau Federation. But many Americans have heard about the supply chain bottlenecks or disruptions, but unfortunately the national news seems to have forgotten about the issue. Aubrey Betancourt is president and CEO of the Almond Alliance. She told a crowd last week at World Ag Expo, speaking on the subject of ports, trade, and global disruptions, that the inability to export almonds is about to become another black swan event for the ag industry. She says, we have supply, there's just a kink in the chain, explaining how the almond industry is hit. She said the 2020 crop was long, which isn't normally an issue, but now the 2021 crop is in storage and is being brokered. So 2021's crop sitting here in the U.S., bought and paid for, but the cash hasn't been received. That's causing a cash flow issue, and that means the grower hasn't received payment, which is used to cash flow the 2022 crop. It's sold, but the kink in the chain is that the crop cannot be delivered. So what's the solution? She says it's time to start acting like America. It's time for states and federal government to address the challenges head on instead of simply applying bandages to the wound. She also supports the idea that the ag industry start telling the story loud and clear, because she says when the public realizes what's happening, they'll understand and support the changes that need to be made. Well, USDA's Economic Research Service is forecasting inflation-adjusted U.S. net cash farm income, this is gross cash income minus cash expenses, to increase by $12.6 billion to $139 billion for 2021. That would be a 9.9% year-over-year increase. But as we roll into the expectation for 2022, it's a 2.1% decrease, down $2.9 billion to $136.1. Now, U.S. net farm income is forecast to increase 20% to $123.4 billion for the year 2021, and then decrease nearly 8% for this year. Net farm income, according to the Economic Research Service, is a broader measure of farm sector profitability. It incorporates non-cash items, including changes in inventories, economic depreciation, and gross imputed rental income. They say if the forecasts are realized, both the net cash farm income and net farm income would remain above their respective 20-year averages. But underlying the forecast, cash receipts for farm commodities projected to rise $3.1 billion in 2022. That would be their highest level in 8 years. It's Agriculture Today.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCotton. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
My farmer this year, in the almond world, we get paid in pools over the course of the year. So 4 or 5 times a year, you get a payment. That gets deducted. It's usually cents on the pound. And that's part of your operating budget through the year. And eventually that comes, you get a final check based on your final production and output. And the pool payments are pulled out of it over the year.
Aubrey Betancourt is president and CEO of Almond Alliance.
Normally, a pool payment is coming from your handler, your processor, and they're floating your cost, your operating cost, throughout the year. And so for this time of year, your first pool is usually coming right now. Why? I need to bring bees in so they can pollinate, and I need to start my process here. I need to start, you know, getting land prep done and irrigation systems up and running and flushed and ready to go. And normally that pool payment is about 70, never been lower than 70 to 50 cents a pound. I'm already seeing letters come out from my handlers and from my processors and haulers and shellers to their growers saying, because of supply chain, I'm only able to give you 10 cents a pound right now, and I'm not sure I'm going to make your next pool payment. I don't know what's going to happen in the subsequent pool payments. So why is that? Why is all of a sudden the guy whose job it is to help with cash flow is saying, I'm out of options? Last year, so we got to take it backwards. 2020's crop was actually very long. It was a big, healthy crop, and it got shipped pretty well. And so our markets overseas in the almond world, our largest market is actually India, and then we also hit Chinese New Year in a number of other parts of the Asian markets as well. Germany is also a very large market for us. 80%, as we know, 80% of the world's supply actually comes out of California. So I kind of love that I'm the Almond Alliance of California, but I'm like, hey, if you're making trail mix in Minnesota, you're my client. Like, this is when we're responsible for that large of the market share. The world is my client at this point. So the 2020 crop was quite long. And so while we were selling the 2021 crop and it wasn't getting delivered, sometimes that's okay. You can have a little lag. Asia was still munching on their almonds for 2020, right? The world was like, hey, we're cool. We had a nice lot storage up of 2020 crop. But the 2021 crop started back up, and it's been sitting in storage largely. As that has been sitting in storage, even though it's getting brokered and paid for, the payment does not get received until it is delivered. So 2021's crop is sitting here in the United States, bought and paid for, but it's not, the cash has not been received. And so now my hauler, who's supposed to be making a payment to my grower to help with operating costs for 2022, cannot, because he never got paid on the 2021 crop that's still sitting in storage. It's sold, but the kink in the chain says it can't get there. And this is the reality of what we're heading into, is this cash flow problem. Now, what's that going to start doing in our markets, and what's it going to start doing with our supply? Well, 2021 crop's sitting in storage, which means there's a lot of storage space being eaten up. I just sat down and had a conversation that we're going to run into a storage issue. Bins are going to be short. Storage location is going to be short because the 2022 crop, trees don't stop growing just because the last one didn't get shipped, right? This is the one thing about farming, and I loved explaining this growing up as a farmer and farming myself. Farmer doesn't get to leave. It is the farmer is responsible for a living, breathing organism that they have to keep alive. And that living, breathing organism's job is to produce a nut, and it's going to continue to do that. And we're going to keep our farmers alive, and we're going to keep our trees alive, and that's what's going to happen. But we can't stop that crop from growing. So 2022's crop is about to back into 2021's crop. What does that do with the market price of my crop when I have that much supply? Price goes down. Is it because there's no demand? Nope. Is it because there's no supply? Nope. We have a kink in the chain.
Speaking at World Ag Expo, Aubrey Betancourt. It's Agriculture Today.
The advantages that we have to provide financial services in the ag is top-notch. It's the best in the country. We have a capital management plan that we all celebrate and hold very close to us at Capital Farm Credit. And that capital management plan is premised on the fact that we're a cooperative. So as a cooperative, we believe that the members of the cooperative own the capital of the cooperative. At Capital Farm Credit, together, we're better.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So I have a podcast called What Color Is Your Tractor? And I have another podcast called North American Ag Spotlight. But this What Color Is Your Tractor has been kind of my baby that I've thought about for years and years and years, and it took COVID for it to actually become a thing.
Chrissy Wozniak's a Florida agribusiness and marketing consultant.
And the reason it's called What Color Is Your Tractor is because I've been involved in agriculture my whole life, and back in Aggie school in college, I would see how these farm boys would just get so excited and angry over the color of their tractor. And I just thought, this is crazy. Like, I love horses and I love calves. And right. So that was my angle. And I just thought it was so interesting. And then working in agriculture, you see the stories of the manufacturers really is very interesting to me. And I've been very lucky to travel North America for my whole career, and I've got to know a lot of the manufacturers, and they have incredible stories, you know, just sitting around together at trade shows or whatever, and being able to learn their stories and learn their histories and their challenges and how they built their companies is just so interesting to me. So it's called What Color Is Your Tractor? The Ag Brands You Love and the Ag Brands You Love to Hate. So once a month, I'd sit down with a manufacturer and talk about their story. So we just released John Deere, where I sat down with Neil Dahlstrom, who's the archivist at John Deere, and he told me some really cool things about John Deere that I had no idea about. But I also interviewed Jim Mendez from Krohn last month, and the month before that was the great Don Landall. And I've taken that factory tour, and I knew when I had this idea, I think it was probably in that factory tour, that I knew I wanted to do something like this someday. And his life and his legacy is just incredible. So I'm so fortunate that I got to sit down and talk to Don Landall himself, and that he would share this with us. So that's What Color Is Your Tractor.
Social media for companies is one thing, but for producers, are they using it right?
I would say yes. It's very important to share our stories, right? Share the stories of ag. It's very important for that to get out into the public, especially to the end user who's so far away from the farm. The one mistake that I see over and over again is that we forget to pivot and help the consumer understand how it helps them. We tend to position ourselves as the hero, and we're not the hero. We're the guide who tries to help the consumer become either healthier or stronger or less pain or, you know, so many other things. But we always have to remember how it affects that end user. And that's, you know, key to all marketing. That's part of the algorithm. You have to show the consumer what's in it for them. So, you know, keep sharing your stories, but also, tell them why. Tell them always explain why. And, I think that'll go a long way. And then not just be an echo chamber, just, you know, saying, look how great we are. We live in the country and we wear boots.
What are some adjustments we can make when using social media?
There's so many issues in agriculture and I guess one thing that's tough, and I think is a big divide in agriculture, is us fighting amongst ourselves over farming methods. So, and I see so much of that online, and really it just makes us look bad. So why can't we just say, yeah, I'm no-till. You know, let's not fight about it. Let's say, you know, you have a great point there, and I have a great point here, and we're going to farm our land the way we want to, and just leave it there, and try to make a better marketing message to the consumer. I think we should all be thinking that we're not just talking to each other. You know, we're always the face of agriculture to the people that are sitting at their table enjoying their food every day.
It's Agriculture Today.
When your field calls for the perfect type of tough, go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Stock up and save on John Deere filters and packaged oil at the South Plains Implement semi-annual sale. Now through February 28th, receive 10 to 12% off John Deere filters and packaged oil for large ag equipment, and 10% off compact tractor home maintenance kits and oil when you purchase filters. No payments, no interest options available on qualifying purchases. Some restrictions apply. See us for details. With 14 locations, there's a South Plains Implement near you. South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Federal Communications Commission has been around since 1934.
Jessica Rosenworcel is the new chairwoman of the Federal Communications Commission.
And it oversees communications in this country. And, of course, back in the 30s, that was basic telephony, and that went on to include broadcasting, satellite services. And today, a lot of times when we think of the FCC, we think about high-speed Internet service and broadband. Really, these are the services that we all need to function in modern life, and the FCC plays a role in making the policies that help those services reach everyone everywhere in this country.
We talk about the digital divide, but there are two planes, those in rural areas without high speed and those who pay too much.
Well, first I want to say you're absolutely right. There really are two issues in our nation's digital divide. On the one hand, we've got areas in this country where the infrastructure is not present. Often rural communities that, you know, if we don't build that infrastructure there, they'll be consigned to the wrong side of the digital divide. And I think they'll lose a chance for really community success in the 21st century. And on the other side, we've got affordability. There are a lot of households that are making hard choices about paying for groceries and gas. We want to make sure that they don't have to shut off their internet. We want to keep everyone connected. And so the FCC has programs to do and address those two things. On the one hand, we've got programs to help support broadband deployment across the country, especially in rural communities. And there's a lot more funding coming as a result of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, not just through the FCC, but through the Department of Commerce and a whole bunch of other agencies in Washington, so that we can make real generational change and build that infrastructure everywhere. And then today, we are announcing that we now have 10 million people in this country in less than a year who've been signed up for affordable broadband programs through a policy that the FCC has been running since last year to make sure that low-income households or households that are struggling during this pandemic have the opportunity to get online and stay online. And we reached that 10 million mark this week. So we are going to call out the good and amplify it and make sure that people know about that program, which is now called the Affordable Connectivity Program.
But can we really connect every household to broadband, high speed? She says it's possible.
Oh, I think we need to be just that ambitious. We figured it out with electrification about a century ago. You know, there was a time when people said we couldn't light up the rural countryside, that our farms would never really see refrigeration, and that those were just the kind of services that were only available in cities. But we proved them wrong. I think this is our generation's shot to do the same thing with broadband. But what we're going to have to do is take all of that funding that's at the FCC, that's at the Department of Commerce, the Department of Agriculture, elsewhere in Washington, and make smart decisions with state and local officials about where to deploy those funds, because this is our shot. This is our chance to reach everyone everywhere. And I don't think we should stop until we reach 100% of us, the big cities, small towns, everywhere in this country.
Has more on the Affordable Connectivity Program.
No, the really great news is that in the infrastructure bill, Congress decided to make that program more or less permanent by giving it a lot of funding so that anyone can go sign up. Lots of people are eligible. If you're on Medicaid, SNAP, you have a child going to school with free and reduced lunch, you've got a Pell Grant, there are loads of ways to qualify for this program, and you can check it out at fcc.gov/ACP. Again, it's called the Affordable Connectivity Program. We've got more than 1,000 Internet service providers nationwide willing to sign people up for low-cost broadband. We want to make sure as many people know about that program as possible.
Chairwoman of the FCC, Jessica Rosenworcel. It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
AquaYield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burn down.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burn down herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So we look at supply chain side on the other side of it. Why isn't that crop getting delivered to the person who bought it somewhere overseas?
Speaking recently at World Ag Expo, Aubrey Betancourt, president and CEO of Almond Alliance.
You know, there are not enough boats. Every boat in the world is being used right now. There was actually an entire line that was supposed to retire, and I know we've got friends from the port industry here. There was an entire generation of ships that was supposed to be retired, and they have kept them online because there is that much product moving in the world right now. COVID has resulted in a 20% increase in consumerism and imported goods in the United States. We all knew, you know, we all sat home and we didn't go on vacation and we didn't go to dinners and we didn't have all these luxury things. Instead, we ordered stuff on Amazon because it felt so good. Hey, I'm guilty of it. Totally did it. But that 20% increase of imported demand has not tapered despite the pandemic continuing. So what happened was, our infrastructure at our port system is now taking in a huge amount of input that it has never taken on before, and it is not equipped to do so. That comes from a lot of pressure points then on that domino effect, right? Physically, we have the ships having to try to get in. You have so much containers coming in, so many containers sitting, so many containers trying to get out, both empty and full, both full coming in, empty sitting on the dock, full coming off. Now we've got a logjam of logistics, so many trucks trying to come in and out and in and out. And I'm overly simplifying, but this is literally part of the Frogger game that is happening, and our port managers are sitting there going, how do I just enhance flow? And they're playing live video games of trying to figure out how to just make the system function more. Well, more containers are coming, which is great, but there's a container shortage, so how is that even possible? Because we hear that headline and we see that headline. Well, there's a container shortage because the empties are in such high demand. So that ship that's coming in from overseas is taking longer to get into the port because there's a logjam of the ships getting into port because the ports can't handle the amount of volume that's coming in, that's been coming in now for 3 years and hasn't let off, which puts pressure on labor, puts pressure on physical infrastructure, puts pressure on the trucking, puts pressure on the logistics. We have a lot more containers than used to be having, and they're taking up as much space as they possibly can. We've seen the images in Los Angeles and Long Beach. They're parking them on the streets. There's demand on this all over the world. It's not, or all over the country. It's not just here. And it's happening all over the world as well. That ship comes in, finally. Now it's 15 days behind what used to, or it, you know, it could be, you know, it's 15 days. Some of my logistics guys are saying they're building in a 15-day lag time already. But what used to take a few days is now, or 15 to 20 days, is now taking 50 days. So it's now longer in the shipping. They're delayed. When they finally get in and they finally get unloaded, they're going, I'm behind schedule. And that empty container is now worth 30 times what it used to be 3 years ago back in Asia. Take the empty, haul butt back to Asia because I get paid $30,000, $20,000 for that empty, what I used to get $30. So I'm already behind schedule. I can make up time and I'm going to get paid anyway. No incentive for me to take almonds with me. No incentive for me to go up to the Port of Oakland from Long Beach and make that extra stop. Why? I'm 15, 50, 25 days behind schedule. Why go up to Oakland where I'm going to have to sit for 4 days and wait for trucks, you know, empties to come off or trucks to come in? I'm waiting for empties to go get picked up, taken back to some grower out in Houston or some processor out in Houston to load up that container and try to get it back to Oakland to get it on the boat, to get it back out to sea. If you're that carrier, the incentive is too tasty to just grab the empties, turn around, and go back.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Been a lot of conversation about inflation. Originally, 6 and 12 months ago, the government was telling us, oh, it's transitory inflation. Well, you can't have this much economy, this much money that's spilling into these markets and have transitory inflation. You've got a bottleneck in here. We've got more demand with limited supply with all these bottleneck issues we have. This inflation trend is real.
Randy Block is CEO of Cattle Facts.
And I would tell you, as we'll look at a few charts here in just a couple of minutes, but again, we haven't seen inflation like this since back in the 70s. I know a lot of you in the room weren't here in the 1970s, and I do want to make a few comparisons on how this is different than what it was back in that time period. We've been warning you that crude oil prices were going to have a significant move. And again, they still have a significant upside risk in here over the course of the next 12 to 24 months. Costs are going to continue to get higher. All of the things that we're using in our business, I think you need to be prepared for that. We know how to navigate it. Again, the cost of doing business is going to go higher. The cost of end products is going to continue to move higher. So just be aware of that. Make sure you take that into account as you're planning and plotting your course down the road. Interest rates, they haven't started to move yet, but it's coming, isn't it? We will definitely see interest rates start an uptick sometime in 2022, and I suspect that will continue here for the course of the next few years.
But what a difference just 1 year makes.
This gives you a pretty good perspective of how we've come through this last 12 to 15 months. Again, if you just look at the color of the lines, this is from January 1 of 2021 in here to the early part of February. And you can see what has happened in here. The Bloomberg Commodity Index has gone up a third, hasn't it? Gone up 33% in here since the 1st of 2021. The equity markets, with the corrections we've had in here in the last several weeks, it's up 14%. Live cattle prices are up nearly 20%. From a year ago. If you look at where live cattle prices are today, they're basically $25 a hundred higher than they were a year ago at this meeting. I guess we didn't have this meeting a year ago, but they're $25 a hundred higher. Feeder cattle and calf prices are pretty much the same level higher as they were at that time period. And corn prices are up about $1.25 a bushel compared to where they were a year ago at this time. So you can see all these things in play that I'm talking about. And again, we are starting to move that needle.
Still, this isn't the 80s.
If you look at the consumer price index, you look at the inflation trends that we've had. Again, this chart is taking you back in here into the 1970s. What's the comparisons that we've had into the 1970s? I think there's a lot of things that are totally different. Obviously, we had high inflation in the 70s, but we also had a lot of debt. We had a lot of farm debt. We weren't near the type of situation we are from a credit standpoint in the industry. We're in a situation in those times we were only exporting about 2% of our total production. So we are nearly a closed market back in that time period when you contrast that nearly 19% of our total meat production is exported. Total meat, beef, pork, and poultry is exported down. So again, there's a lot of things that if some of you are sitting here saying, well, Randy says we're going to look like we were in the 70s and 80s. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just giving you a perspective in here of what we went through in that time period, and I think it's one that to keep in mind. There's a lot of differences in what we had in the 70s and 80s.
It's Agriculture Today.
but your field calls for the perfect type of tough. Go all in on FiberMax Cotton to deliver the right seed for whatever you're up against. Like the FiberMax 1621 GL variety. Strong as an ox, fights like a bull. Built to buck stress, boost yield quality, and muscle up when bacterial blight throws down. Whether you're looking for that type of tough or another, you can find it at FiberMax.com. FiberMax Cotton Seed from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
This is Agriculture Today.
As you all are probably very well aware, there are no cotton fields in Hong Kong. However, we wanted to bring one to the region because we feel it's so important for people to understand cotton and also be connected to cotton.
William Kimball, Vice President, Supply Chain Marketing for Asia for Cotton Incorporated.
So we did a huge backdrop of a beautiful cotton field picture, and then we brought in stalks of cotton from the United States and created rows and rows and rows. So those people that were at the event not only got a wealth of information about all the wonderful things and great ideas in cotton, but also were able to just connect and really begin to understand what that cotton fiber is, how it is a fiber that is ultimately grown from the earth. And, is a sustainable fiber and all the wonderful things that go along with it. So cotton really has a very compelling story. And we're always trying to drive that message home, whether that's here inside the United States or overseas in our global operations.